Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Well, good evening, everyone, and this is Tom Ingracia and Jared Krudinsky, and we are filling in for January tonight. So we're taking over January's show. She doesn't know that yet, but we're taking over her show. No, not really. January asked us to fill in for her tonight, and as you regular listeners know, we've been on January's show a number of times now, and we'll continue to be on once a month, probably through the rest of this year. But tonight, January is not going to be with us. But we have a very special guest with us tonight, and our guest on the show is Ken McDonnell. Now, Ken is one of the 16 amazing people that Jared and I included in our book, One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. And we're really happy to have Ken with us tonight to share with us all a little bit of his journey and the adversity that he had to overcome in his life and his success story. So let me tell you just a little bit about Ken and introduce him, and then we'll get Ken right into the mix here. Ken McDonnell is a husband, father, and triathlete, and he is the public relations director for Wake Up Narcolepsy, a nonprofit supporting narcolepsy awareness and research. And we'll be talking with Ken a little bit later in the interview about Wake Up Narcolepsy. But in October of 2007, Ken was riding his mountain bike when a car struck him from behind. And he has no recollection of the accident or the next 5 weeks of his life. He was airlifted to the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, where a team of trauma specialists saved his life and where his saga began, and the saga that he'll share with us tonight. Through life support, risky surgery, lengthy rehab, and finally back from the abyss. So, Ken, welcome.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks, Jared. Glad to be with you tonight. Let me first say that it's such an honor to be part of Tom and Jared's One Door Closes book. I certainly don't think of myself as one of those very special people, but I'm happy to share my story in hopes that it brings other people inspiration and hope if they're battling life-threatening challenges. The book really demonstrates the power of positive thoughts and the power of family and friends to help you through those really tough times.
Well, you know, and I think, Ken, for me, I think that's why your chapter in the book really is resonating with so many people, because of the severity of the injuries that you received in that accident, but also because of that power of your will and the power of that family connection, and how that all those things played together. And I think, you know, that is something that so many people today are looking for and striving for, is having that family connection. So before we talk about your accident and your recovery from that and how you overcame the adversity of that situation, let's talk a little bit about your life before the accident and before your long road to recovery. What were you doing pre-October of 2007?
I was getting older. I was 57 at the time. I'm now celebrating 32 years of marriage with the same wonderful woman, Deborah. And we have two great sons, Cody and Tyler. I live in Holden, Massachusetts, where I was living at the time. I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania in a kind of a rural town, semi-rural town outside the city of Scranton. My profession is communications. I'm a writer, a media person. I work with the press to help them tell stories of my clients or the companies that I've worked for in a positive light. I've done some graphic design, you name it. I've kind of got lots of experience in communications. I've also been a competitive athlete since I was 15 years old. I was on the high school track team. Back then, in my area, we didn't have cross country, so we had to run middle distances, mile, half mile, quarter mile, those kinds of races. And I just continued running through college, not competitively in college, but for fitness. And I continued to run after college. I have completed, I think, 6 marathons. My best time is 2 hours and 47 minutes.
Wow.
Many moons ago. In about 1985, my body was pretty broken down from that kind of mileage. So I turned to triathlon, which is swimming, cycling, and then completing it with a run, 3 legs. I've never attempted, nor do I have any desire to attempt what they call the Ironman, which is a 2.25-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and a full marathon running. I have no desire, probably no. Or the ability at this point to ever attempt that. So I focus on what they call the Olympic distance, which is the distance, obviously, that they run in the Olympics. It's a 1-mile swim, about 25-mile bike, and then a 10K run. I've always been very healthy. My worst injuries ever were a broken knuckle and sprained ankles. I'd never had a bicycle accident or an automobile accident. So naturally, like many people in my position, I really thought I was untouchable, that I was either lucky or skilled enough to stay up on my bike until then. However, obviously, I found out really something very different.
Yes, yeah, and so really, your life really did change dramatically on that day.
Yep, I was I had completed a triathlon about 2 weeks before the accident in September of 2007, and this was a beautiful Sunday afternoon, and I went out just for a fun ride on my mountain bike. A triathlon is the bicycle part of it is on the road, so it's a road bike. Those skinny tires, hard tires, very aerodynamic cycles, and I just wanted to go out and have some fun on my bike. So I went to a state park near my home in central Massachusetts. And I spent most of the time in the park on the park roads, dirt roads and trails, but I had to get from one part of the park to another on a public road. So I was out on the public road, and I'm cycling along, and I don't remember any of this because of the injury, but eyewitnesses have told me that a driver approached me from the rear and sort of wandered off into the breakdown lane where I was riding, and slammed into my rear end. I was thrown up onto the car and high into the air, and I crashed down on the pavement. and broke my helmet in two. My bicycle was thrown across the guardrail and destroyed, and there I lay. The police report was that this woman either couldn't or didn't want to acknowledge that she had hit me. She did stop, which is not terribly, you know, a lot of times when you hear about accidents these days, the driver doesn't stop. Well, this person did stop, but she was either in such shock or in such denial that she didn't, could not acknowledge to the police that she had actually hit me. Long story short, I was airlifted to UMass Medical Center in Worcester, Massachusetts, near where we live. I wasn't carrying any written identification. I was carrying my cell phone. So when the first responders got to me, they couldn't identify me. And the first newspaper article the next day identified me as a John Doe because I didn't have ID. Mm-hmm. And eventually that evening, the police were able to contact my wife, Deborah, by going into my cell phone and going through the auto dials, quick dials. And of course, number one was her phone. And she picked up the phone and they said, was anyone in your family riding his bicycle in Rutland this afternoon? Yes. Well, you better get to UMass Medical Center right away.
Mm-hmm.
So that was her introduction to this situation.
How fortunate it was that
I know
that your cell phone was still in one piece after the impact of that accident.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So they got me to UMass. Apparently, still at the scene, even though I was pretty much out of it. They said that I did try to stand a couple times, but as it turned out, there'd be no way I could stay standing if I were able to get up off the pavement. So I was in and out of consciousness, basically.
Yeah.
So they got me to UMass, and the injuries were extensive and everywhere. I had terrible damage to my pelvis. I had a separation in the front where the two kind of circular bones in the front. It's called the pubis symphysis. It's supposed to be about a half inch separated with cartilage, and the impact created a separation of about 2 inches. I also had a separation of the SI joint where the sacrum, which is part of the pelvis, connects to the spine, to the sacrum. I'm sorry, to the ilium, and that was separated. And the doctors told Deb soon after they got me there that I had about a 25% chance of surviving the first night.
Wow.
And apparently Let me get to this first. There were other injuries. I had several broken, cracked vertebrae, broken ribs, collapsed lung, renal artery aneurysm, which serves the kidneys, I believe. And I also had I suffered a traumatic brain injury.
Stop you there for just a second because we need to go to a commercial break. But when we come back from break, let's pick up right where you left off with the traumatic brain injury and that part of your story. So we're going to break right now to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Pam Evans has been married and divorced 4 times and lived to tell the tale with honesty, humor, and a heartfelt message. Check out Pam's first book, Ring Exchange, Adventures of a Multiple Marrier, where she shares her hard-won lessons about behavior, emotions, relationships, and her marriage partner choices. Learn more about Pam's road less traveled and how she anticipates every day with joy and a sense of gratitude. visit Pam's website at www.ring-exchange.com. Her book is available on Amazon.com, too. Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com.
Well, and this is Tom and Jared back with you. We're subbing for January tonight and filling in for her. And our guest this evening is Ken McDonald, who shares his story in our book, One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. Now, Ken, before we broke for commercials, you were telling us about the extent of your injuries after the accident. So let's pick up right where we left off.
Okay. I was talking about the fact that probably the major, most serious injury was the traumatic brain injury. I crashed down onto the left front part of my head, which is where the controls such as judgment and initiative and organization and those kinds of things are handled, and they had soon after I got to the hospital. I was obviously unconscious, and the doctors told my family that they gave me about a 1 in 4 chance of surviving the first night. And you know, after all this transpired, when I was finally back on my feet, I looked into that, and apparently the kind of brain injury I've had generates tremendous amounts of adrenaline and other stress hormones that put tremendous stress on the heart. So most of the people that don't survive this kind of injury die from heart attacks, basically.
That's interesting.
And yeah, it was very interesting to me at the time and still is. And, you know, I have to attribute the strength of my heart to be able to withstand that kind of stress to, you know, to the training that I had been doing for 40 years before. It kind of finally paid off, all the miles and all the sweat, and it literally did save my life.
Right. Yes.
So. So then, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering then, so your chapter in our book, One Door Closes, is titled Mind Over Matter. What do you think that means to you?
Well, you know, in terms of the matter, it was, in my case, the situation was a life-threatening injury and the threat of, you know, a lifetime of possibly being in a wheelchair, being dead, and having to deal with a long recovery, which at the time was completely out of touch. I was trying to survive, not worried about whether I was going to ever get on a bike or not again. So I think, you know, that was what the matter part of it was, and the mind was more or less when we find ourselves in this kind of a horrible situation, whether it's a physical or emotional injury, those kinds of things, that the endurance of your mind to have continued positive thoughts is just as important, in some cases more important than, you know, the quality of the medical attention that you get. So it's you know, the mind is and what you can do for yourself emotionally and spiritually in these kinds of situations is critical.
Well, Well, and Ken, earlier you mentioned the importance of the family support system and your family's being there as a major part of your recovery process. And in the book, you really share the story about how it was Deborah's advocating for you when you weren't able to advocate for yourself that really made a very critical difference. So talk a little bit about that and the role that Deborah played in determining what was going to be the best course of treatment for you.
Well, she's a very, very strong-willed person, and the doctors all along told me that they had never experienced a patient advocate as, you know, as strong-willed as she was. She was really there for me. I don't know what else to say about that. Coincidentally, we have a close friend in California who is an orthopedic surgeon, and she and Deb have been friends since childhood, and this woman, her name is Sandra Proctor, Dr. Proctor, in outside of San Francisco. She was coming to Boston the next that week to a medical conference, and Deb, you know, told her immediately what had happened to me. And when Sandy got off the plane in Boston, she came immediately to the hospital in Worcester, and she took a look at my films and all the test results that they had done to that point, and she agreed that some major and very risky surgery would be called for to enable me to function even half normally in the future. And also coincidentally, a very well-known and respected orthopedic surgeon, Paul Tornetta, who is at Boston Medical Center, happened to be going to the same medical conference the next day that Sandy was going to be at. And Sandy didn't know him, but knew of him and said that if she could look him up at the conference, she would mention it mention my case to her and ask him if he might be of help. Again, long story short, they connected. He took a look at my test results, and he agreed that, you know, this kind of surgery is going to be necessary, and he agreed to do the procedure if I could be transferred into Boston from Worcester. It's about an hour drive. At that time, just remember, I'm still unconscious. They kept me in a medically induced coma for about 5 weeks during this time to keep me settled down, to keep me stable, so I wouldn't be moving around a lot as they were doing certain things to stabilize my pelvis so that it could be operated on, to start to bring it back into alignment with traction and what they call an external fixator, which is kind of like an erector set, if any of you remember that, that is screwed into my pelvis from outside, obviously, and starts to straighten the pelvis before surgery takes place. So, you know, her connections and her friendship really brought me to Dr. Tornetta. She had to make a very difficult decision whether to keep me at UMass and have them do the procedure, the surgery, or have me transported into Boston, which was a very risky transfer, as it was, because I was still on a respirator. And it turns out that ambulances don't have the capability to power, electrified automatic ventilators to help me breathe. So she finally made a decision to have me transferred into Boston based on Dr. Tornetta's reputation and Sandy's guidance. And so they put me in an ambulance with a nurse from UMass who manually pumped a bag to keep the ventilator supplying me with oxygen.
Wow.
Through that trip into Boston. When I got to Boston, Dr. Tarnetta finally was able to perform the surgery. It took about 4 hours. He basically put my pelvis back together. I have a lot of hardware both in the front and in the pubic symphysis to tie that thing back together while it was healing. And also I have 2 8-inch screws from the ilium, the big plate, kind of plate part of your hip bone, basically, connects. They had to screw that back into my sacrum, which is the triangular bone at the bottom of your spine.
Uh-huh.
So again, to keep it stable while it was healing. So again, I'm still unconscious. The first thing I really remember was waking up at a rehab facility in Worcester again, five weeks after the accident, and this was for physical rehabilitation. But
right.
At that point, they couldn't do much for me with PT because I was still prohibited from putting any weight on my right side, which was the side that both of the dislocations took place.
Right. We're going to take a quick mm-hmm. break here again, Ken, and let's pick up when we come back and talk a little bit about what life was like when you finally came out of the coma and regained consciousness and how you got back to where you are today. So let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. The new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredemski captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Well, and welcome back. This is Tom and Jared filling in for January this evening, and our guest tonight is Ken McDonald, who suffered a traumatic brain injury in a bike accident in 2007 and shares his story in our book, One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. And Ken, before we broke for our sponsors, you were talking about having been in a coma for 5 weeks and then coming out of that coma and starting a rehabilitation process. When you came out of the coma after having no recollection of that previous 5 weeks, what was that like for you? I mean, that must have been a very disorienting situation.
Oh, it was disorienting. It was frightening. It was confusing. You know, the drugs that they use are very powerful, and they do what they're supposed to do, but it takes time. It takes your body time to get them out of your system. And when you're coming out of those kinds of drug treatments, nothing seems to make sense. And you you have to trust everybody around you, the experts, your family. Everybody told me, in some cases, comical stories about what I might have said during my coma.
Yeah.
Because they would periodically put me on what they call a drug holiday, where they would try to wean me of some of the drugs to see how I responded. And you know, so I was half conscious at those times. And you know, apparently you say and do things that are kind of off the wall.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I have to take everybody's word for it. It's some of those things seem unlike me, but you know, I guess that's what the mind does.
Right. And fortunately, you know, in those situations, you know, we don't realize what it is we're saying or doing, so
right.
that we don't have that same level of shame or embarrassment. Jared, why don't you jump in here for a minute? I've been doing all the talking, so why don't you jump in and ask Ken a question?
Well, absolutely. Well, Ken, so you made it through all of this in this traumatic accident. How do you feel that your life has changed since? Do you feel back to normal, or are there still residual effects?
Physically, I'm back to normal. The doctors did amazing things to get me back in line and get me put back together. I've completed, I think, 6 or 7 triathlons since then. First, after my accident, was less than a year after the accident.
Mm.
And in 2011, I went on to complete the what's called the Escape from Alcatraz. It's a triathlon in San Francisco, where you actually swim from Alcatraz Island, the prison island, to the mainland. It's about a mile and a half, and the temperature of the water is 52 degrees, which is chilly.
Yes.
So I guess that would have to have been a highlight of my recovery, to be able to.
So this accident did something to your judgment then, obviously.
Yeah, 52 degree water. That doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah, doesn't appeal to many people for sure.
But the hardy you.
If my life has changed, it's, you know, there's good things that have happened and certainly not good things that have happened. I know that, for one thing, I'm much, much more sensitive to other people's injuries and misfortunes. It's very difficult for me to see, especially on television, accidents of any kind, or even sports accidents. If somebody's injured in a football game, it's very difficult for me to watch the replay of somebody's knee giving out, something like that. So, you know, to the extent that that's a good thing, I guess it is. I'm much more empathetic with people's misfortunes now. I've also taken, you know, had a new appreciation for friends and family. The outpouring of you know, support for me and good wishes after this happened, which I still hear from people. How are you doing? And you know, I say this, it's ancient history. It was 6 years ago now, and but it was very humbling, and still is, to hear so many people with such heartfelt concern for me after all this. I guess those are, you know, some of the major things that I've seen changed. The brain injury.
Does this contribute?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was wondering if this newfound extra empathy that you have, has that led you to your job working with Wake Up Narcolepsy, or is that completely unrelated?
Well, there's a connection between my injury and this job, and I'm fortunately I don't suffer from narcolepsy. Narcolepsy is a very poorly understood and very poorly known about sleep disorder. And typically, when you hear about narcolepsy, it's people falling asleep at inopportune times during the day. It could be right now as we're talking on the phone. I could somebody with narcolepsy could fall asleep, just collapse onto a desk and sleep for a few minutes. It's a neurological disorder that oftentimes comes from an autoimmune response, and almost always from a from the flu virus, as it turns out.
That's interesting.
So, you know, I've worked in the social services from time to time in my career. So, you know, I guess I have a built-in sense of empathy for the social services. And as it turns out, after my accident, I was on my own in a small consulting or working for myself, basically. And I was looking for a full-time job, and I saw an opening for a communications director with Wake Up Narcolepsy. At that time, I knew nothing about narcolepsy. And so I thought it might be interesting work, and I applied for the job, and I was hired, turns out. And my boss, Monica Gao in Worcester, Wake Up Narcolepsy is a small foundation that was created by two families who have narcolepsy in their family. And these families found out after the diagnosis that there was very little information available for support or, you know, understanding by people with the disease. And so they figured that if they were having trouble finding information, a lot of other people must be also. So they created Wake Up Narcolepsy to raise awareness of the disease, and through awareness to raise money to fund research to find a cure for it, because it's an uncurable disease at this point, really horrible. Once you get to know more about it, it really disrupts people's lives and families who are associated with it. So I'm happy to be involved with them. I think we do good work. And as I said, there's a connection with my accident, because after I was hired, Monica told me that she had learned about my accident, my recovery, and it was, you know, the feeling that if I could overcome this kind of tragedy, I guess you'd say, then I must be, you know, a decent person to work with, and I hope I've proved that point for her.
Well, I think that you have, from my perspective, certainly, and I know from the good work that you've been doing for Wake Up Narcolepsy for the last year plus, that yes, I think that you certainly have proved that judgment of Monica's to be right spot on. We need to take one more break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a minute to find out from Ken what wisdom he would share with others who are facing a major illness or debilitating accident as he has faced. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Nicholas Hazel is a senior member of the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor and author of Laughter, the Drug of Choice. Scientific research is discovering that our bodies only hurt when we don't laugh. For anyone interested in a laugh-out-loud collection of medical terms and poetical music, often at the expense of health professionals' love and life, Laughter, the Drug of Choice, is just what the doctor ordered. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
And welcome back, Tom and Gracia and Jared Krudinski here filling in for January tonight with our special guest, Ken McDonald, who has been sharing with us about his recovery and comeback from a very traumatic accident a number of years ago, and his path through recovery to back now being the marketing director for Wake Up Narcolepsy, which is a nonprofit organization. And Ken, we were just talking a little bit about Wake Up Narcolepsy, and I want to come back to that right at toward the end of our show. We have just a few minutes left. So what I would like to ask you right now is, what advice or what wisdom would you share with others who may be listening tonight who are facing an injury or an illness that was as debilitating as yours was? I mean, how do you find the courage and the strength to come back and that will to go on? Where did you find your hope?
Well, I suppose I have to credit my upbringing with a lot of it. My parents were plain people, but very focused on the right things. I guess it starts with that. What I have learned is the importance of patience, not in the sense of not patience in a hospital, but patience in being patient with yourself, with your body, with your mind, with others who are trying to help you. It's not always easy to wait when you're eager to heal. Your body's only going to heal as fast as it heals. So be patient with it. Another thing I've learned is the importance of following doctor's orders. I think, a lot of people think that they know better than doctors, but I found that I recovered and I healed, I think, partly because I followed doctor's orders to the day. I was in a wheelchair for 3 months after the accident, after I finally got home, and the doctor said, don't try to stand on your right side, because your hip, your pelvis is still very tender. And I didn't. I stayed put, and I clearly that helped me recover a lot more quickly. The other thing that has been really difficult for me is to acknowledge the differences before and after. I say I'm completely physically recovered, but I know I'm not. There's still a sense of denial that I struggle with every day. There are things about the brain injury that I don't like. My temper is shorter than it used to be. I make snap decisions when I shouldn't. And those are the kinds of things that are difficult to acknowledge, that you are different. I don't see myself as terribly different, but everybody, my family kindly tells me that I am. And I've spent time with therapists since then, psychologists, who stress the need to accept what you are now. And, Never having been badly injured in the past, it's I find it difficult to accept that I am different. And I guess I, you know, I'm coming to grips with that. And
never having been badly injured.
And yet, despite all of that, you know, you are in a place now where, you know, you're very successful. You know, you're working with Wake Up Narcolepsy, this nonprofit, where the work that you're doing is helping to make a difference in other people's lives. So despite all of that trauma and that, you know, and the continuation of feeling that you're still not back where you were before the accident, you know, you've been able to move forward and you've been able to create that success for yourself again.
I guess I have. It's you know, I'm not the kind of person who dwells on how great things are, but I also don't dwell on you know, what I've lost. I try not to focus a great deal on the fact that my short-term memory is not what it used to be. Sometimes my judgments are not what they should be. But, you know, all in all, I'm extremely thankful for where I am today. I could have emerged in a vegetative state. I could have, you know, I could be in a wheelchair. I could be dead. So, you know, I have no complaints. Let's put it that way. I'm very thankful for where I am today. I'm extremely thankful for friends and family. And it's, you know, it has given me a new improved outlook on all these things.
Well, and if you could sum up in one sentence your definition of success, what would that be?
I guess success is acknowledging both your strengths and your deficiencies and making the best of that mix.
Well, I think that really is a very, very powerful, powerful definition. And that, I think, for me, is something that we all really need to focus on, and having that mix in balance, yes, and, you know, and being grateful for where we are now, and not dwelling on the past, because the past is just that, and we don't get do-overs very often, if ever, having that forward focus and taking what you have and using that to the best. So that's I think that, you know, knowing you for as long as I have, Ken, and Jared and I have known you for a number of years now, and have had the chance to work with you in a variety of capacities. You know, you are one of those people who really finds that inner strength, and so, you know, it really is that mind over body grit, I guess I would say, that for me, looking at your life and where you are now, really for me that mind over body aspect is a key ingredient to your success.
So, I appreciate those nice words. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Well, thank you for being with us tonight and for sharing with January's listeners your journey and the trials, the tribulations, and the successes of where you have. If people want to learn more about Wake Up Narcolepsy, how can they do that?
We have a very active website and social media. We are at www.wakeupnarcolepsy, all one word. Narcolepsy is just like it sounds, NARCOLEPSY, wakeupnarcolepsy, oneword.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn. We're trying to get out there for sure.
Great. Well, that's good. And Ken, thank you again for being with us tonight and for sharing with us. And Jared, thank you for co-hosting. And if you want to read more of Ken's story. You can find our book at on Amazon.com, and to learn more about the Motivact Group, you can go to www.motivactgroup.com, MOTIVACT group.com. And thank you so much, and we'll look forward to being back with you in about a month, and we'll have January here with us as well. So thanks so much, and good night, and remember to live into your dreams.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.